But another aspect of it that I've really sort of resonated with me is the fact that a lot of our children have had to grow up a lot this year. We've had to explain to them that you can't do that because you might make them sick and they could die. That's terrifying to have to explain to a child. But it's got to the point where it wasn't a 2-week affair where you could kind of gloss it over and say it's nothing. It's like, Daddy, why can I still not go to this person's house? Or why can it, because there's this virus out there that can harm people. Mm. And it's not just a little cold and it's a chew, wipe your nose and you're okay. It's a matter of it could be very bad. And because children had to grow up a lot quicker, it means the conversations you have to be that much more tailored to their situation, because they might be 6 or 7, but you must talk to them like they're a 10-year-old. But also be mindful that they aren't that age, even though you have to address it in that manner.
Welcome to the show. I'm Joe Horton. On the Guild of Dads show, we unwrap weekly the incredible stories, skills and expertise of the world's most captivating dads and experts, along with topics that will captivate you. If you're a first-time listener, we have insightful conversations with people who are truly masters at work and experts in their fields. Fascinating individuals, writers, entrepreneurs and ultra athletes, professors, psychologists, and today I speak to one dad about his journey of fatherhood, both in and out of lockdown, the challenges he has faced, the organisation he represents, and an incredible new book which promises to tell some truly inspirational stories about normal everyday dads just like you and me. Every conversation we have translates the experience and expertise of our guests into practical knowledge you can use to better understand yourself as a dad, and in the process improve your physical health, mental health, relationships, career, and the way in which you show up to the world as a role model to the next generation. We also cover tricky subjects from all angles and viewpoints to give you a new and different perspective. Today, I delve into the power of empathy and how, whilst all dads are different and unique in our own way, there are many similar challenges and struggles we face along the way which unite and bond us together, provided we're willing to have the necessary conversations. My guest today is Matt Brown from the organisation Music Football Fatherhood. We discuss Matt's own Jamaican upbringing and how his friend Elliot started the Music Football Fatherhood organisation from just a small blog around his experience of being a black father. The way in which Matt sees empathy as being an important skill for dads to develop, and understanding where we have come from. We delve into some of the inequalities between mums and dads when it comes to the early year setting, how tricky it is to explain COVID-19 to children, and how the actions of those in government can shape how not to show up as role models for the next generation. I also find out from Matt the inspiration behind the book Dad that has been crowdfunded and releases soon, along with some of the real life accounts of dads in it on the front line of fatherhood. If you ever wonder how some of my amazing guests get to where they are in life, the athletes, the entrepreneurs, those making a massive impact on the world, I can tell you that pretty much all of them follow a very deliberate plan or system of some kind. This is exactly what I do too, and I'm revealing how you can implement a plan and system in your own life completely free in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint, over at guildofdads.com/dad. Incidentally, many of the people I interview on this show will be leveraging the power of similar systems to radically level up their lives and transform into the men and dads they always wanted to be. So you will be in amazing company. And now to my conversation with Matt Brown. Matt, welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Likewise. It's a pleasure to have you on this evening. And this will go out after Christmas in the new year, this one, but as we kind of run up to the Christmas period in what has been a bit of a kind of crazy year, as we were discussing before we kind of came on air. But I'm glad that you've come on to speak to me today, because you've got your organisation, Music Football Fatherhood, are doing some really cool stuff right now and have got some amazing things coming up, which I'm going to delve into a bit more in this conversation. But how is your run up to the festive period going, Matt?
Personally, it's going really, really well. Decorations, all sorts done. had a fantastic event yesterday, which was the Festival of Fatherhood. And we had so many people join on. It was touching topics about anti-racism, being a new dad during COVID, support that you have for being a carer and stuff like that, as well as having a comedian. We had music playing and we had a dance off at the end, which was epic. I've got to edit the video, but it was fantastic.
So what sort of dad dancing moves did you have? Did you have the lawnmower and did you have, you know, making shapes and stuff?
I didn't get involved personally, but there were some people breaking out some 80s breakdance moves, and someone did a bit of a floss as well, so you could tell that they had a child. But it was epic. People were free to go. Instead, they pulled out their phone and just recorded it, and it was just like, yeah. But it was good vibes, good fun all round, knowledge. There was knowledge to take away from it, inspiration, and just nice to finish work officially on a high. So it was fantastic.
Yeah. And I think that's important as well this year to kind of finish off things on that kind of note, because like we were discussing just before we came on, it's kind of been a year of two halves in the sense of, I think that a lot of people are looking to put 2020 kind of behind them in some respects, but I think some people have learned a lot about them kind of themselves and kind of what's important in life and the things that aren't important in life this year. And I think through all the difficulties, I think that's certainly something to kind of ponder and think about in terms of our futures and what we do in 2021 sort of thing. So
massively, I agree. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. In terms of music, football, and fatherhood, it's a kind of wicked name, and I was intrigued when I first heard about it. And I was like, so how does this kind of work? Where did it start, and what was the inspiration behind it?
Right. So just to clarify, Elliot Ray, founder of Music, Football, Fatherhood, he had a child in 2015. Was a slight complication involved in doing it. He's a black guy like myself, and he just felt a sense of there was not enough out there for him as a dad to relate to. And unfortunately, being a black guy, you do get often people's heads turned because you might walk into a shop and people want to look at you a certain way. I like to wear hoodies, but if I wear a hoodie walking down the street, I'm going to expect people to cross the road because that's unfortunately the norm. And being a black father is something that not necessarily everyone understands how to navigate, that when they're presented with that situation, oh, you're in the child's life or anything like that. So he created his own blog, and I believe this was on New Year's Day of 2016. Mm-hmm. And it was just writing a blog about his personal experience. He then partnered up with other companies, started writing for them like The Independent, and a lot of people saw it. And then they wanted to jump on board and contribute their own stories, because men, unfortunately, don't have a platform. Well, things have changed now, obviously, hence the podcast. But initially, men are just kind of seen to be there, do what they got to do, stay stern, just crack on. But we've got a lot of things that we want to share, want to say. Is it right to feel the ways we feel? And that was Elliot's way of sort of being able to get it out of his system and just put it out into the world. And the fact that it was so well received just kind of made him think, oh, wow, okay, so it's not just me that feels this way. There are other people that feel this way. And then eventually, after a few people got on board, he took it down, he rebranded it, because I think it was something like Elliot Ray's blog, and then he changed it to Music, Football, Father, because those are the things that he was passionate about. He used to be a musician in a band, mm-hmm. with his wife, brilliant music. And then football, he's a QPR diehard fan. Don't know why, but he is. And fatherhood, you know, he's so proud to be a father, and he loves what he does. And, you know, it's for him, it just made sense to tile it like that, and then to just encompass everything that you're going to discuss around those topics. Don't get me wrong, we do deviate from that, but the essence of it is music, football, fatherhood. So it's not too heavy, but at the same time, it still gives you the space to express yourself and get something in return from it.
Yeah. And it gives you talking points as well, because those are kind of quite good icebreaker talking points, aren't they? You know, guys that are into football talking about, you know, the recent matches there's been in the Premier League and who's top of the table and, you know, did you see that foul at the weekend and stuff? And then linking that in with music is a really nice thing. And because again, like we've discussed before, the music can become kind of quite a common denominator, isn't it? Something you can relate to, and you know, everyone has kind of got their different musical tastes, but it's interesting how it becomes. You know, I've got a guy that's on my Facebook group, and he was asking me about kind of about music, and you know, and then he said, "Oh yeah, I remember you mentioning this on one of your podcasts and that." And you know, are you into Soulful House? And I was like, "Yeah, back in the day, that's what I used to listen to and stuff and that." And then all of a sudden, it's kind of like a ledge for your conversation, in a sense that you start to kind of say, "So what albums do you like? And did you like this?" Or and then all of a sudden, it's really it just opens up a whole world of someone's experience. You know what I mean?
And I think that's the clever thing about it, whether it was intentional or not, is the fact that when it comes to football, you mentioned the team in the Premier League, but at the same time, he supports QPR, who got relegated. I will mention that several times if I can, but they're not in the Premier League no more. But it doesn't mean that your love for football dies or diminishes with them getting relegated from the Premier League. It still lives on within you, and you'll be excited when they get to their promotion push. And you could support a team in the lower leagues or anywhere in the UK, anywhere abroad, and you still have that same passion for the sport.
Yeah.
And you can relate to one another on it, and you can see the same thing and have different opinions on it. The same with music. Just because you like music, it's all inclusive, because you can have various types of music that you like and reasons why you like it. And fatherhood, you're raising a child, hopefully the best way you can possibly, and they won't turn out the same way as your child, but you can still respect and appreciate the struggles that you each go through, whether you can directly relate to them or not. But you can say, yeah, they'll sleep this night. They're brutal. That is a form of torture. That is just, and it's just something nice when all three of those key words that are in the title are just there, that kind of hold you together to have a conversation as an icebreaker, and then sort of allow you to find common ground with that person you're having a conversation with. You know what? Even if I don't agree with you, I respect you because you've enlightened me on something I may not have seen or appreciated prior to the conversation.
Yeah. And I think that is more, this is becoming more important more than anything else right now, because I think in the times we're living where, you know, there are kind of divisions and stuff, I think being able to have something which brings people together as a kind of middle point, if you like, and enables us to kind of come together from two sides of a discussion, or two sides of a debate or whatever, and find that kind of middle ground, is a kind of healthy thing. Because I think that's, you know, that's the nature of how, you know, human relationships have kind of evolved over the years. And this kind of, all this kind of, you know, you're the enemy, and if you don't agree with me, you're the enemy and I want to destroy you sort of thing. You know, that just kind of, you know, I ponder this point quite a lot these days. And I think that it's almost like, in some respects, we're kind of, if you think of human evolution, where it's almost like a devolution that we're going through at the minute, where, you know, we've spent thousands of years learning these skills of how to, you know, interact and understand one another. And it's almost like we're kind of slipping back a little bit at the minute. So, but there's a core of people who are like, actually, no, let's keep this on the level, and let's keep this, you know, where we are still talking about different stuff and that. And, you know, you touch upon, you know, Elliot's experience of being a black father and how black fathers are maybe looked at differently to what my experience would be. And it's impossible for me to relate to that because I've not walked in his shoes. But having discussions like we're having tonight enables all of us to sort of understand what each of us goes through in different respects, but also what dads go through, which are the same, you know, which is, you know, tearing your hair out thinking, when is this baby going to go to sleep? And, you know, and what am I going to do when my kid gets bullied for the first time? And, you know, all this kind of stuff, which is, you know, people are very different, but they're also very similar in some respects, you know what I mean?
And I think that's, like you said, a big takeaway, because, you know, I'm a person that likes to have a lot of empathy in people. I like to understand where they're coming from, just because I think if I have a better understanding of you as an individual, it might help me prepare myself if I find myself in a similar situation. But at least I can have a conversation that adds value to your life, or comfort, or support, or just be of some value to you. And I think it's very important, because there's certain things that you might think, you know, like you just mentioned about your child being bullied. I've heard many white people say that, oh, I don't teach my child about color, which I get. It seemed like the harmless approach. But unfortunately, I was one of them, got taught from a very young age that I was different. I have a color that's not seen as the norm. And that was because I was going to have other people tell me that. So my mum kind of jumped in front of that and told me, so I knew how to navigate that situation. But then the argument is that for me personally, is that if someone doesn't get educated about color or understand there is ethnicities out there that are different to the norm, they will walk into a room and will not see a problem when there isn't a variety of different colors, different representatives. So, you know, you might not have thought that. I'm not saying you per se, I'm just using an example here, but someone may not have seen it from that point of view, thought, oh, crumb, I never thought I was adding to the problem. It's like, don't get me wrong, what you was doing probably coming from a place of love. I appreciate that. But it was causing harm because X, Y, and Z. And it's all about communicating, educating one another, because unfortunately, I don't know, we'll touch on it later on, but even when it comes to things like the dad books, the different people, the different stories is in there. I myself, as someone who's solely I do the social media for them, and I have the pleasure of talking to different people that contribute to the book and people elsewhere within the MFF community. And hearing some of their stories, my heart breaks just because I'm not in their position. But I think how strong they are, how amazing they are to still find the strength to keep going on. And that makes me stronger and want to encourage other people. And that's what all of this is all about, effectively. Through communicating, through having empathy, we're able to help find what holds us together. Mm. Yes, we're set different, but what holds us together? What can we learn together and grow from? And women are fantastic at doing that. They have empathy with each other. They can have icebreakers. They can go, who was it? Oh, it was in one of our Zoom calls where someone says, women can go to a nightclub, go into the toilet, and that becomes a therapy session. Men, we avoid that like the plague, not because it's ranking there, but just because, you know, you don't want to talk to the guy next to you. If a guy's next to you, he don't understand the rules. Go over to the other stall, mate. Just crack on. But it's the whole fact that they're willing to have a conversation and to try and help nurture their fellow sister. But men, unfortunately, haven't had the opportunity or have never pursued doing something like that.
Yeah.
This is, I think, fantastic opportunity, and the year itself has allowed us to kind of reevaluate what we've done previously and sort of think, well, how else can I communicate with people? I actually need to talk to someone. Yeah. And what you're doing is fantastic.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, the more people that I interview on my podcast and the more people that I speak to around this particular subject, and, you know, I've spoken to evolutionary psychologists on this particular subject as well, and I'm rapidly reaching the conclusion that I think that men have lost contact with their tribal nature. And what I mean by that is that for thousands of years, men and families and women existed in tribes, and there was a hierarchy, and there would be groups within that tribe, probably groups of men, groups of women, groups of adolescents, and there was elders, there was probably people of kind of middle age, and then there was the younger ones, and there was a kind of knowledge that was kind of passed down, and there was a rite of passage, and there was a initiation probably, and the tribe looked out for one another. So, you know, they'd teach each other different skills that maybe one of them was better at than the other, and, you know, they would help the kind of weaker members. But I think that what's happened, I think, in the modern world is, and I don't know whether this is just by accident or just because of the way the modern world has developed, this nature has kind of just been stripped away. And I notice a lot, you know, I've got a book, you know, sitting here, The Daily Stoic, which I've got to read over Christmas. And I notice that there's a lot of guys getting quite fascinated with ancient wisdom, be it either Stoicism or it could be Buddhism or it could be, but these are kind of ancient traditions where men have learned over millennia to understand their own minds, their emotions, how they react to the world. And it's like there's almost like a a kind of re-education taking place right now at the same time as men are rediscovering the strength of actually being part of something that's kind of that's bigger than them, where guys have their backs a bit more, if that makes any sense.
No, and I would say I agree with that. I think understanding where you're coming from helps you to understand where you're going.
Mm.
And I think it is, when I say it's capitalism, probably is. That's kind of encouraged us to have our individuality in terms of we're pushing to say, I have my own phone. I have my own car. I have my own house. Why? When you look at it realistically, potentially, depending on where you live, your router could probably power enough internet for your house plus your next door neighbor's house. But guess what? You don't want to share. You buy your own internet and pay 30, 40, 50, 60 quid, and they pay 30, 40, 50, 60 quid. But if you got together on good terms and say, right, we'll just go halves on this, you save yourself money and you have a community.
Mm.
But we're not that way inclined. It's all about me, me, me. I want my own thing. And by going back and looking at things, we have a better understanding of ourselves. I think that's why potentially, I know for me, that's the case, especially when I had my son, because just to put in context, I'm in a mixed race relationship. So I'm myself black. You can't see that. I Specsavers is your friend. My wife is white. And it's made me understand that I have to look and understand my own history more so than before, because my parents were from Jamaica. Their parents were in Jamaica. So I had access to the information all day, every day. Now that my grandparents have passed away and I don't really speak to many of my cousins like that, it now falls onto me and my mum to try and instill that in my son. So I have to then go back in my roots and kind of dig up things and really appreciate what it is and pass it on to them. And it helps me to understand me as an individual. Why do I conduct myself in a certain way? Why is my attitude towards certain things this way? And it's part of my upbringing. It's part of who they were, why I'm able to smile even when I'm in adversity, because reality is my ancestors went through slavery and they found a way of still soldiering on, finding the good in the situation and being well. So it's ingrained in me to be this way.
Mm.
And I think a lot of us don't know where we're going until we understand where we're coming from. And we need to have that level of understanding to reflect on ourselves and say, right, what are my family about? What is the tribe I'm coming from like? What were they like? What did they stand for? What did they fight for? What did they despise? So where do I fit into that piece? And I think no one wants to talk about the tribes because they don't make money when people are in tribes. They only sell a single product, a single policy for a group of people. But if they can peel you off one by one and sell you them individually, that's where they make their money.
Yeah, yeah. And I think as well, there's been a kind of a tendency to kind of demonize, I think, tribes in some respects. And don't get me wrong, I think there's probably certain kind of groups, if you like, that may be sort of formed for nefarious purposes. But I think provided that the kind of, you know, the kind of founding nature and the fundamentals of why you're kind of forming a group and you know, the motivations behind it are kind of, I don't know what the word to use, are in the right place, then yeah. I think that tribes could be, and men certainly discovering tribes a lot more, are going to be a really strong point, particularly for mental health, I think, going forward at the minute, because there's, you know, people are obviously often saying kind of, oh yeah, we've got to raise awareness and we've got to, you know, talk about mental health and stuff and that. But I'm often sort of thinking, well, okay, so what next? What after someone's talked about it and whatever, then you need to have that infrastructure in place and you need to have that group in place that is going to help that individual go forward rather than go backwards again. You know what I mean?
Massively.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think some of the kind of biggest challenges that you see got, you know, new dads going through? Cause obviously your child is kind of quite young at the moment. What do you think some of the biggest challenges that new dads are going through right now?
Taking into consideration COVID?
Yeah, you can do it. You can do it pre-COVID and post-COVID if you want.
So pre-COVID, it was a bit difficult for me because I was in a fortunate position where I used to work for Santander and they gave you the 2 weeks government time off to when you have a child, and the company also gave you additional 2 weeks paid time off as well. But my boss was quite sweet. She sort of sorted out, so I had my 2 weeks annual leave, 2 weeks off from the government, 2 weeks off with the additional part from them. And I was bored out of my mind. I tell you, for the first 6 weeks, where the child just wants mum, just wants boo, just what am I there? I'm a third wheel. So I did all the stuff that I could do, which was sign him up for nursery, sign him up for dentist. The child has no teeth. He barely has gums. And yet he's already got a dentist in place. He's at the sign up for the GP. We've done his name. We've done all the bits that I could do, but I was kind of bored. But then fast forward into October, shared parental leave. I took that. I was off for 6 to 7 months. I say 7 months because I had annual leave add on to it. And the looks I got from people were just something else. And it was hurtful because you're going to these, I don't want to call them mum's group, but let's be honest, they're classes for babies. But because it's normally the mother that's with the child, I'm usually the only guy there. And then when you want to change a child because they've messed themselves, the changing rooms are usually in the women's toilets. What am I just going to have to go out and be on the side and just have my child exposed to everyone? And it was kind of uncomfortable being in that situation, especially when you think about the fact that a lot of the teachers as well were female. Mm. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you just feel that there's a lack of male representatives in those spaces. So if you're a bit of a shy guy and you can't have small talk with women for fear of anyone misinterpreting the conversation, it just makes you feel like I'm just going to stay at home with my child. And then potentially you could get postnatal depression yourself because all you're doing is locked up in your house, just rocking with your child, and your child doesn't get exposure. Did I experience that? A little bit. I'll be honest. I was part of an NCT group that my wife and I were involved in, and the girls were fantastic. They invited me into their WhatsApp group, and then they continued it when I was there, and even till today, I'm still in it. But it was still different when it's girls talking about what they're going through, and it's like, I don't have anyone to talk to. The guys, none of the other guys in my NCT group took shared parental leave. So it's very hard to relate to them because they were happy to sort of wake up, tap the child on the head, go to work, come back, kiss, 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 give back to mum, go to bed. I didn't want that in my relationship. I wanted to be a carer, not the carer because it's my wife and I just want to be, but I wanted to be very much involved in it. And I felt it was hard for me because when I wanted to do it and I'm going to these classes and people look at me weird. And I say look at me weird because sometimes they went to breastfeed their child and they're looking at me like I'm looking at them. It's like, I really don't give a monkeys what you're doing. I'm here for my child. If my eye crosses you, my child is my everything. That is the reason why I'm here. I'm not trying to, no. But it's just the way they made me feel in that situation. Going to change my child and potentially having to go in the female's toilet to do so. Mm-hmm. I wasn't happy about that. It's just those sort of environments that just made it feel a little bit uncomfortable for me, at least. And I think they should do more for it. I went to Barleylands. I can't remember where they're based, to be fair. But it's really good. You can go outside and feed animals with your kids and stuff like that. Or just you and your other half you want to. Or go on your own, whatever.
Pretty cool, Barleylands, to be fair. I've been there with my nephews over near Basel, and it is pretty cool, so.
Yeah, I did enjoy it. I've been there a few times, to be fair. And I went there and my missus went to change my son. My missus changed him because it was in the women's facility, not men. So I'm doing an Instagram live on my personal Instagram, talking about how much I like this, but I'm a bit disappointed about this. They were quick to get back to me and say, oh, so sorry, we usually include guys and stuff like that, but we just missed this one. But there's also another toilet by the entrance that didn't have change room in the men's facility. And what was heartbreaking for me is because I was fortunate enough to be in a situation where my wife was with me. What if I wasn't? What if my son messed himself up and he just needs to get changed? What position then are you putting me in? What if you got someone who is in a same-sex relationship and there isn't a woman there that can get involved as such? You're putting people like those in an uncomfortable position that we shouldn't be put in. And I just look at it and think, you fight and shout from the rooftop that we should have equality, pushing that a certain gender be equal to another. But then if that is the case, you need to swing it the other way when it comes to underrepresentation of toilets in the neutral zone. Mm. And those are the things that hurt me sort of pre-COVID. during COVID, I would just say it's the relationship you have with your child. I think it's been a beautiful time for a lot of people to spend more time with their children than they ever thought they could get at this young age. Being able to understand their personalities, being able to see them learn new things and adapt to situations and having more of a direct input into their lifestyle. I think for me, that is the wonderful thing. I honestly think 2020 is kind of giving people a bit of a blight in terms of if you're out of work for a period of time, hey, COVID. I've been at home. I've done a bit of self-development. I've done some stuff around the house. Hey, furloughed, COVID. You get that excuse and you get to do something you would never normally get the opportunity to do. So I think it's had a great, a positive effect on people. But at the same time, on the opposite side of it, it's messed with a lot of people's mental health because, like, my son, as young as he is, he hasn't been able to see his grandparents as much as he would like to. Thankfully, the bubbles will be put in. My mum's a single parent, so she's part of our support bubble. So now she's able to see him. My in-laws look after my son. But because my mother-in-law's vulnerable, it's a bit difficult because he still goes nursery. So she doesn't always take him, but he's been able to see him. But these times where they're very young, they change so quickly. Mm. And it was heart-wrenching to me saying, we've got our son, he loves his family, but he's not able to see him. And then you start to wonder, he's not mingling with kids. Today, for instance, our next door neighbor's kids came around to drop us a Christmas present and he heard kids and he got excited and he went to run to the door. And it hurt me because he can't do that. We watch TV and you'll see kids playing football and he gets excited, but it's like, mate, I can't take you outside because I can take you outside, but you can't go play football with other people because of the situation. And that hurts me. And I guess that's more of a me thing than it is him, but you worry for his well-being growing up.
Mm.
You also got the side of it where men want to get out the house.
Yeah.
And you can't, you're living on top of your other half. And don't get me wrong, I love my wife to bits, but sometimes I've got my summer house, I'm quite fortunate, but I don't necessarily want to have a conversation around her because it's just a different conversation when it's just you and that other person on the other end of the phone, if it makes sense.
Yeah.
And you miss that time of commuting to and from work where you could either talk to someone or read your book or do whatever you want to. It was your own time. You're robbed of that now because you're working from home. Mm. And it's a very delicate situation where there's a lot of positives. There's an awful lot of things to concern yourself with, but you need to sort of pick carefully which ones you want to focus your energy on and navigate around the not so good things. I guess flip on its head as best as possible if you can.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a space. I think this is the thing that I've been fortunate and I've been able to carry on going to work throughout it. So my life has kind of carried on quite normally, but from mates of mine, I sort of kind of speak to about, you know, that have been working from home, it becomes hard where you've just not got that space. Like you say, you might be on the way to work on a train or you might be able to have some time away. You're not getting that kind of break time. And I think that one of the things that I sort of advocate to dads that follow Guild of Dads is to really have, you still have kind of date nights when you have got children. But more important than that is time for mum away from the family unit, either with friends or to kind of go to the gym or go for a coffee or whatever. But also time for dad away from the family unit because I was talking to a gentleman called John Gray who authored the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and he calls this concept cave time. Men need cave time to go and kind of process and go through their thoughts and make sense of their thoughts and, you know, and then come back into the kind of family unit almost like refreshed to kind of carry on with their kind of fatherly and husbandly duties, if you like. And I think that's an important point because that's kind of been sort of made a lot more difficult during this whole period. But like you say, it's interesting how you say about the kind of being able to be there all the time has been a good point for it as well. I remember back to when mine were a lot younger, and I can relate to that whole thing of having to, you're like searching around and you're trying to find a clean place on the floor to lay the change mat out to try and work out where you're going to change it. But I also remember when you sort of, you know, when you walk into the village hall or the hall where the kids are having like a birthday party and whatever, and you'll be like the only dad, and it'll be like, because my wife would be like, do you want to take my kids to the do you want to take the kids to the party? And I'd be like, yeah, all right. So I'd take them to the party, and you'd walk in, and the mums would just go, whoosh, and you're like, all right, I'm the only dad here.
Yeah.
So it is kind of quite awkward, and you're right. I think there's been massive strides in terms of, you know, equality, and but I think that there is still that very much you feel like an honorary dad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's really insulting, especially when you get certain people make comments like, "Oh, is the daddy daycare today?" And you're like, my child. There's no daycare involved. Like, I got bags under my eyes for a reason. I'm heavily involved in this child's life.
Yeah, and if you were to flip that around and say, "Oh, you're just popping out with your kid for a few hours, are you?" You'd just be like, "What? How dare you say something like that?"
Correct. Yeah.
So yeah, that is definitely something that I think a lot of guys kind of come across, and I think it's often quite regional as well, because we were lucky. When we had ours, they still had like children's centres. But I think shortly after that period was when they pulled a lot of the funding for children's centres. So a lot of that, you know, some still had children's centres, then they morphed into, I think, something else. But yeah, you know, it's often kind of a bit of a postcode lottery in terms of what is actually available and going on in your area as well, isn't there?
No, definitely. Because we're fortunate, because where we're based, we're in Essex. And they obviously mother care was about. We had a really big mother care. And while my wife was off, they used to go to the big mother care because they had a coffee costa upstairs, and then they had like a soft play area. Obviously, baby's too small for that. But it was nice thinking, oh, when they're older, they can go there. They're the baby sensory class next door. Everything was there. And then when it went, it was like, oh gosh, what do we now do? And that, you know, that is it. You know, you had your play centers when, you know, when your little ones were growing up. That was our play center. It's like, you look at that thinking, oh, great. Can't do anything because there's nothing here. And, oh, wait, COVID, yeah. Our child's going to grow up being a recluse.
Yeah, exactly. And we know, and the thing is as well is, you know, I've interviewed a guy, Ed Tronick, who pioneered the Still Face Experiment, which was basically around the interactions between parents and children. And up until a certain point in history, they thought that it was like a one-way interaction, and the still face experiment basically disproved that, because it proved that children pick up on the, you know, what their parents are going through and the mood that their their parents are going through. And I think that it's kind of underlies quite an important point that babies and also human beings, they need that kind of that human connection and to be around other people. And I think that for all of us in this last kind of year where you're having less human connection, it does have an effect on you, because, you know, we know that when you hug people, there is a what they call the cuddle hormone, oxytocin, is released. So there's a biochemical reaction that goes on in your body when you are having physical contact with someone. And babies need that, you know. Babies can die through lack of love, through not being loved. And it's exactly the same concept for adults as well. So, and that has got to have an effect on people's mental health, not being able to have those, you know, just the simple act of, you know, hugging people and stuff. And that it's kind of, because it fills you up with that connection that you just don't get across a Zoom call or that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Especially when you're talking about the grandparents.
Yeah, and I think as well, you look at it, is that, well, there's two things. One, if you look at it this way, if your children were sitting on a Zoom call on a regular basis, FaceTime, whatever you want to call it, you would say, that's not normal. Go outside, go make some friends, because you'd encourage that behavior. But we're forced to do this. But another aspect of it that I've really sort of resonated with me is the fact that a lot of our children have had to grow up a lot this year. We've had to explain to them that you can't do that because you might make them sick and they could die. That's terrifying to have to explain to a child. But it's got to the point where it wasn't a 2-week affair where you could kind of gloss it over and say it's nothing. It's like, daddy, why can I still not go to this person's house? Or why can it, because there's this virus out there that can harm people. Mm. And it's not just a little cold and it's a chew, wipe your nose and you're okay. It's a matter of it could be very bad. And because children have had to grow up a lot quicker, it means the conversations you have to be that much more tailored to their situation, because they might be 6 or 7, but you must talk to them like they're a 10-year-old. But also be mindful that they aren't that age, even though you have to address it in that manner. And I think it's just something where that plays on the part of the mental struggles that us as parents have. But fortunately, my son is too young to have that conversation, but I still have to tell him off to not do things around the house. But he wouldn't normally be in the house under normal circumstances. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as they get older, you're then having to articulate yourself and have more conversation with your children than you would normally ever have to do. And if you're flicking between having a professional conversation with your work colleagues, maybe banter, maybe proper professional in terms of we got deadlines here and for all these different acronyms, to right, I've got to break this down to the most simplistic manner possible. I need to understand my audience, which is who my child is that I'm speaking to, whether it's the first, second or third or whatever, and be able to say, right, this is what the situation is. I need to appreciate where you're coming from, how you may be feeling, why what I was originally going to say may not come across in the best possible way, saying you just can't go because that's not good enough. Boris is on TV pretty much every other day at this point. What is he saying? They might have downloaded the BBC News app. They're hearing other people say it. So you've got to make sure that you can be a reliable source of information and approachable. And it's very difficult. And I was actually talking to Elliot about it the other day, saying that a lot of people sometimes take time to mull over their decisions before they make them. This year has just made people have to go, life-changing decision, think about it, go, life-changing decision, go. And you're like, I've got no time to sit and actually reflect on what you're asking me. You're just telling me, pick a door. And I don't know what door. Or if you want to go matrix, pick a pill. I don't know. I don't know the consequences. Can you repeat the question, please? And it's causing all manner of anxiety. And if you're a guy, more times than not, we don't have therapy sessions. We don't talk to enough of our friends about it. We have banter, but we stay away from the true heavy subjects. So when it comes to these things where it's just go, 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 you're thinking, okay, I'm drowning a little bit here. But you might not be able to articulate it, but you might feel a bit of weight on your shoulder or heavier heart. And you're just like, I can't put a finger on it, but I know that I'm not moving the way I normally move. It's taking its toll on me and I just need my time. But your time doesn't exist anymore because you may be working from home. You may be on furlough, unsure if you're going to go back to work. You may have been made redundant, don't have a job. You then got to worry about your house, your kids, your family. Have I made the right decision doing this or that? And that, for me, is very scary, especially when you think about the number of men in general who commit suicide under the age of 45. But now, coupled with lockdown, it's a lot.
Gents, I'm going to quickly jump in here because I have an exciting announcement. If you've tuned in for any period of time or have grabbed a copy of my book, The Dad Blueprint, you will be familiar with my journey and why I started Guild of Dads. I discuss how I struggled by myself for a long time before I had the good fortune to get around other men on a similar journey to me, which is when my life really changed for the better. Which is why I'm excited to announce that I've built my own community of men and dads called the Dad Circle, which has just opened its doors, and I'm looking for 20 men like you to become founder members at a special lifetime rate of just £40. But you'll need to get in now, because once these spots are filled, the monthly subscription is £80 per month. So what do you get? A private members area. This is a bespoke area where you can set up a customized profile away from social media so you can link up with other men and share ideas, suggestions, insights and strategies to help you succeed, leaving you more time to focus on becoming the dad you always wanted to be. Weekly virtual Zoom sessions in which you'll have an opportunity to join others to discuss a monthly topic so you can share experiences and gain insight about yourself from the comfort of your own home. A copy of my ebook, The Dad Blueprint. This book takes you chapter and verse through my own journey, but also the secret system I used in order to radically change my life. This includes a proven 12-week method and shortcuts to systemize your development, so no more chaotically trying to change all by yourself. weekly virtual team calls in which we'll share your wins and losses for the week and be held accountable for keeping to your objectives and tactics to achieve them, so that your growth is supercharged from day one and you're no longer doing this all alone. There's recordings of calls. Dads can't be everywhere at once, so calls are recorded, meaning you can access content at your convenience anytime, at your own pace, and not feel overwhelmed. Monthly topics mean that we will explore a different topic monthly, which means you get to grow, learn, and build your knowledge of yourself and others in a supportive environment. There's going to be physical and mental challenges. Many of us are living in a comfort zone and can achieve far more than we think. By engaging in challenges, you're able to see beyond what you thought was possible for yourself and grow in confidence and accomplishment. The monthly assignments that you'll have to complete will get you thinking and acting differently about an element of your life, which will improve your self-worth and confidence. There's going to be a 12-week battle plan. This is a proven, powerful system to help you identify where you want to go in life, how you'll get there, along with tracking resources. This means no more chaotically trying to improve here, there, and everywhere. And with a growing resource library of videos, documents, templates, and guides, this will help you succeed, learn, and grow. The best bit, there's no contracts. If for any reason you find the dad circle is no longer for you, then you can leave at any time, no questions asked. If it's not for you, there's no obligation to stay. Want in? Lifetime member spots are filling fast. And once they are gone, that's it. To join, simply email me, Joe, J-O-E, at guildofdads.com, and I will send you the details across. Yeah, and I know what you mean as well, because what I've noticed as well is predominantly a lot of the people that listen to my podcast are kind of into self-help and they're into self-development and stuff. So, you know, they've probably before this year even happened, they probably had their morning routines down. They were probably doing some kind of self-care. But for a lot of people, they probably wouldn't, you know, the first time they would have heard about, you know, morning routines and scheduling your day out and, you know, all this kind of stuff, it probably within the first 2 months of lockdown, at which point they're just like, hang on a minute, I've got loads of other stuff that I'm trying to work out and I'm just trying to get this stuff down as well, sort of thing. So it's trying to relearn a lot of this kind of newer stuff. And I think that has been a challenge in itself, because, you know, we are also used to medicating our feelings as well. So for some guys it might be eating, for some guys it might be smoking, some guys it might be booze, some guys it might be a little bit more than that. But yeah, I think that this year has been difficult in the sense that there's nowhere to run, there's nowhere to hide. You have to face it kind of head on. And for a lot of people, not just men, but I think also women as well, it's probably been the first time in their life that they've had to kind of face down something that they just can't escape. There is no escape from it. You just wake up and that is it, sort of thing. And I think that is what has blown people's mind a lot, because, you know, I try and stress only about the things that are within my control. But the problem that you've got this year is there's been so much on the kind of media. I know a lot of people have been switching off of the media and actually kind of saying, right, I'm not gonna watch the news every day, I watch it every couple of days and whatever. But it's so pervasive that you can get kind of sucked into it, and before you know it, you're just thinking the world is gonna kind of end. And one of the upshots of it, I think, will be, particularly in terms of children, is how we talk about kind of risk mitigation, because a lot of what's happened this year is around risk. And, you know, it's normal for there to be a degree of risk in life in anything you do, and obviously, but this year we've been having to mitigate risk, and some elements are trying to eliminate risk entirely, which is maybe not a realistic proposition long term. But there's certainly been, I think there's been this battle of risk where some people are saying, okay, we're going to mitigate risk, other people are saying, well, no, we're going to try and eliminate risk as much as we can possibly. But it's not a realistic long-term proposition, eliminating risk, is it?
No, and, you know, I don't really want to go into it because I'll sound very bad saying it. But I worked with this guy, and I say work because I don't work at this company anymore. But he would come to work, he had his mask on, he'd have his gloves on, he'd have, he'd wash his hand, no, he'd turn the tap with the gloves on, take the gloves off a certain way, wash his hands several times, then he'd have his sandwich inside a Tupperware box and then use his elbow. And I couldn't sit there, I sat there and thought, it just takes one thing to go wrong that compromises all of that. Just, and you just feel like, at what point does what you see, what you're doing just make you seem a bit crazy, like a little bit excessive? And he's trying to mitigate the risk of him catching it and bringing it home, but mate, you work with the public, it's going to be difficult. And I think in general there's always going to be a risk, but I think a positive side to this is, so when I worked in finances, I couldn't give advice, but I wouldn't necessarily like to give advice, because if I deal with people I know and I care about, I don't want to be potentially harming our relationship by giving you ill advice. So I would ask you certain questions. Sometimes you'd be so airy-fairy in terms of your answers, or vague if you want to use that word. I will say something that will make you swing the opposite way. So, oh, what about long-term investment? Oh, how long are you talking about? 10 years. Oh, no, I can't do that. Great, we found a baseline there. 10 years is too long for you. Let's work that down. But looking at someone like Boris, who has conducted himself in a certain manner. Let's be honest, no one's had a pandemic in our lifetime to deal with this, so it's kind of new to everybody. But seeing how his leadership skills have been, we've been able to articulate what we do not like about how he's dealt with things. That then in turn should help us look in the mirror and understand us as a leader in the household in a particular circumstance. Because I'm not going to say men are the only leaders, because women, whatever relationship status you're in, can be leaders in their household as well. But it helps you to understand, if you don't respect what someone else has done in a certain way, why is it acceptable for you to conduct yourself in that same manner and deem it okay? For instance, I don't like the fact that things are being offered as vague. For instance, the lockdown restrictions are a guideline or guidance, but not law. But then you're penalizing me as if it is law. So is it a law or is it guide? I don't understand. And when is a child no longer a child? When are they an adult? So can they go between households? There's too many discrepancies there. And then it could cause friction in terms of people that are not with their other half for whatever reason. And then we're going to not be able to spend Christmas with them or other holidays. And it's just a matter of, right, I don't like Boris because of this. So if I'm talking to my child and my child says, Daddy, what's that? And I'm like, oh, mate, don't worry about it. You can't do that. But you said I can do this. I can't call him out on his BS, but then I'm still going and trying to throw my BS around, acting like that's gospel. And I just think that as a point has helped us, especially with things like Trump as well. A lot of people like Trump. I'm not one of them. But I think the way people being able to articulate their feelings or disdain towards that individual and why they don't like certain characteristics or ways to conduct himself has helped us to look at how, hold a mirror up in front of ourselves and say, I don't want to be that person. I don't agree with it, so I shouldn't be it. And as you can probably tell, I'm trying to be this whole positive vibe in terms of taking away the positives from things, because negative, unfortunately, it's good to highlight them and to understand them and identify them. But it's, for me, somehow use them as a catapult to get me to a better place. And I just think you just got to learn from those that have gone before, situations that have happened. It's not an L in the sense of it's a loss. It's a lesson. What have you learned? And I've learned I don't want to conduct myself in that manner. I want to do better. And the relationship I have with my children has to be better than the relationship the MPs or the government has with its people.
Yeah. And there's a number of things that kind of come out of that. And the first thing is role models. You know, there is, I talk about this quite a bit. I think there is a bit of a role model crisis going on at the minute, in the sense that, you know, when I was growing up, there were certain people that you kind of, you know, they were kind of quite wise, they were quite learned, they had judgment or wisdom, they didn't shoot from the hip, they weren't ruled by their ego, and therefore they were able to make good, sound judgments and decisions about things. And I think there is a kind of dearth of role models at the moment. So when you see people in the public eye not acting as you think they should do, then I think there is a natural obligation that falls on you as a father and a dad to think, actually, how would I like to show up to counteract the fact that these people aren't setting a very good example right now? But also there's, you touched upon an interesting thing about holding the mirror up. I think there's, there's something that I discuss called the man in the mirror concept, which is where kind of guys look in the mirror and they see the kind of man that they could be and should be and would like to be, but often they think that the kind of getting to that point is so painful that they kind of lapse back into their kind of, I won't say their old life, but their old ways maybe. And what I notice quite a lot now is that often if you say anything to someone that kind of triggers their ego, it's almost like you're holding up a mirror to their soul these days. And if you've got a degree of awareness, you can say, oh, actually, he's right. I'm being a jerk in this situation and I should have done this or I should have done that, or whatever. But I think people's egos are running the show so much now that very few people can you do that with unless you kind of know them pretty well. And often what happens is there will be a ton of stuff come out, which is all of their egocentric sort of insecurities, rather than saying, hey, he's got me, I should have been doing this, and you know, I'm going to park my little devil ego, you know, I'm going to park that, you know, on the shelf for a bit. And it's a very abstract thing for guys to get their head around, I think.
I think that is the case, and I've definitely been caught out with that many times, and even now I probably do it subtly. But I think through having a conversation, through being part of a tribe and being held accountable helps massively. When you're able to do things in the dark, you're going to keep doing things in the dark. You're going to keep storing crap in there because no one's ever going to turn the light on. So as far as you're concerned, oh my gosh, your house looks immaculate. Don't look in that cupboard. Yeah, it's all good. And that is unfortunately why I think men kind of keep repeating the same mistakes that they've done in the past, because they've always got that place they can hide it. But if you've got people that you can be open with and just have open dialogue and just go, mate, call me out my BS if I've got it. Trust me, I will. That holds you accountable. And I believe you told me that you've got a group that does that as well, isn't it?
Yeah, basically I'm starting a dad's mastermind in a few days' time, actually, called the Dad Circle. And so that is going to be like a brotherhood, tribe, membership, whatever term you want to call it. I call it brotherhood. And so essentially we will have guys that are working a plan in a number of different areas of their life: physical health, mental health, relationships, and also a contribution to the world. And what that means is there'll be weekly meetings. There'll be other guys on the team keeping the guys that are on the team accountable to what they've said they're going to do. So it's going to be a lot more of a environment that's conducive to growth and guys, you know, making a vision as to what they, you know, what, you know, what's important to them in those different distinct areas of their life and how they want to kind of move towards that. You know, if it's a physical fitness, you know, if they're out of shape, does it mean they're going to be doing, you know, half hour of exercise, you know, a day? If their relationships aren't in a good place, how are they going to improve those relationships? But the important thing is the other guys are going to be keeping them holding them to account on that stuff. So it's not going to be a case of, you know, oh, well, I said I'm going to do it and I didn't do it. So it doesn't matter. But it does matter, because guys are going to be saying to them, you said you were going to be doing that and you're not doing it. So what are we going to put in place to make sure that happens, sort of thing? And, it's powerful, because I think guys need to feel like they're not necessarily doing something, but they're moving towards a kind of greater purpose, and that they're growing in life and they're developing and they're learning new skills, and you know, and I think part, and again this comes back to the kind of mental health discussion, that I think if you're kind of drifting along in life, and you're, I always use the analogy of like a cork bobbing along at sea, you're just going to go where the tide's going to take you or the wind's going to blow you. And the problem is that I don't think us guys are hardwired to do that. I think we need to have something to make us get up in the morning and be, when we talked about tribes and evolution tonight, and you look back through the, you know, the millennia, and there's always been a meaningful reason for people to be getting up in the morning and doing stuff and progressing. And you know,
and I would agree with that. I guess to go back to your court bobbing along, and I don't even want to plug this because it's so embarrassing. Years ago, I did a YouTube video, and it was literally about, don't look for this. It was you either sink, swim, or you're treading water. And it's basically saying that if you're treading water, you're content, you're happy with how life is going at the moment. If you're sinking, things have got way too hard, way too much on you, and you need to let go of something so you can at least tread water. You're swimming, come hell or high water, excuse the pun, you will make it to where you want to go. But the problem is certain people won't keep up with you because they can't, they don't want to, or they're just not fit enough, whatever. But if you're treading water, as much as you feel like you're content, you're staying where you are, you're not. The wind's telling you where you're going. Things will change. And all of a sudden, where you thought you was next to this person, they're now over there and you're over here, and it's out of your control. So it's very much a matter of picking which one you want to be. Be mindful what the pros and cons are of those situations and navigating it accordingly. In regards to men having a sense of purpose, I definitely feel that is the case. But I'm also mindful that there are definitely people that don't relate to that because we're all different. So for instance, I am very much a hands-on parent in certain aspects when I want to be, I guess more time than not, but that's me as an individual. So as a man, I may not be seen as the manliest man because of that reason, but it might be women that are seen as, I kind of want to have a child, but I don't want to look after the child. And some women can make them feel like you're less of a woman because of that reason, but they're not wired that way. Then why are you begrudging them that lifestyle, that ability to do it? Hence why shared parental leave really needs to be put out there and be shared across everyone. Because when you look at female footballers, do they really want to take a season out just to have a child? And that could have been then their dream move they could have made. But, you know, it's not fair, and life isn't fair. But we got to try and support each other where we can. And I just think it's really important to be mindful that as much as a lot of us have overlapping traits and feelings and sense of belonging and such, not everyone can resonate to that level. So for instance, they might be on a 2 and I might be on a 10. We overlap slightly, but you may not be feeling it as strong as I do, and I respect you for that, but I need to be able to identify that I might be super passionate about it, but you're just kind of I hear you, brother, but I'm just not there.
Yeah. And there's always going to be people on that kind of spectrum, if you like, because I think that, you know, I think what's hard in life is if you're like a, I don't know whether your kids have got these, but you know those little square boxes where you have like where you can hit the pegs in and you've got a triangle, a circle, yeah, and a square and stuff and that. I think sometimes life is about finding is mixing with those different kind of shapes, but also kind of get, sometimes you need to get around people that are squares, and the squares need to get with the squares, and the rounds need to get with the rounds if they kind of want to move forward, because it's that whole thing, birds of a feather flock together, isn't it? That if you want to do stuff, you need to be around in kind of that environment sort of thing. One thing I want to touch with you, Matt, is something that I've seen you guys crowdfund the new book that you've got coming out, the dad book. How did that come about? I mean, that's, you've just kind of got hit your funding target on that to get that book put out. What made that kind of happen? Was that an idea or an inspiration or a conversation or?
So from the various conversations I had earlier, it seems that it was something where he had an idea of, you know, he started off MFF. Well, obviously Elliot Ray's blog became MFF. So other people want to contribute to this. So there is a need for this. He searched online to see if there's anyone else that's done anything like this. Nope. And you're thinking, like, men want to talk. Why is there not a book out there with a collection of men's stories? And eventually he looked into it, realized there wasn't anything there, and thought, right, I'm gonna try it. And thankfully, through his vast network, he's managed to get different people from different walks of life. So you've got people that have had stillbirth, people that have had miscarriages, people that have had that are widows, people or widowers, I can't remember which one it is for men, sorry. People that are raising their child with being a father and have been a person of faith. Raising a mixed race child, being a single parent, being a step parent, being part of a blended family, and, you know, having a child with autism, having a child with disability. There's so many different things. One of the guys actually getting bullied at work. And these things that you, I guess I'll rattle them off and you kind of feel like, yeah, some of them I kind of expected. Some of you thought, ah, didn't expect that one. And that's what it's about. He went to the publishers with it because he thought, why not try and get them on side to help the process? And they said, oh, it's a really great idea, but can you get someone famous to get on it? Yeah. Well, my personal take on it is that if you need someone famous to sell your books, then what the hell am I paying you for? that's what I thought. But, you know, after getting knocked back a number of times, he's like, right, I'm going to go it alone. And then we literally pulled together, did what we did, and we set a target of £10,000. And I believe we finished on £210, I think it's something like that. So I think it's 251 contributors. And you kind of look at it and think, wow, there's this many people that believe in what we're doing. And for Elliot, he just wants it to be a book out there where people have a chance to see fatherhood from an everyday man's perspective. Don't get me wrong, celebrities are still human. We're not saying that it's not the case. But there's something to be said about someone like you, someone like me, who can talk about what we've gone through and someone else can then relate to it. And I think that is very telling, that people need to not feel alone, not to feel like they're weak because they feel a certain way. The Dad Book is out there to help you feel comfort, support, a sense of togetherness. If we go and use your analogy and say we're part of a tribe, you are part of a tribe. You may not know it, but you are part of a tribe. And if you do want to reach out, we're right there for you. We'll give you that hug. And I think that's what the Dad Book really needs to have, will have a place in history, in the fact that it's laying on a marker to say, here are dads, no glory, just pure guts, feelings, emotions, no drama, just facts about what happened and how we felt at the time. And I personally would love to see the book not just be in the UK, but be translated to different languages. Because when you think about it further afield, how many people in other countries where the man is expected to be the breadwinner, regardless of what you want to do, and they might still feel a certain way. So that book might resonate with them. It would be great if the book's in school so that children have access to it, so that if they want to become a parent in the future, they have access to literature like that, that will help them calm their nerves and understand, well, why is my dad a certain way? Well, if your dad's got an autistic child, you might be able to understand the difficulties he's facing, so that when he then wants to deal with you, who may not be autistic, he may be spent in terms of patience, but you may not see it because when your dad's talking to you, he's got no patience at that point. There's a lot to cover. I'm trying not to go on for too long, but it's just a matter of the Dad Book is going to be so groundbreaking. The fact that we've smashed our target is amazing. So many people believe in it. There's I think 20 people with stories in there that I think that it'll be near impossible for you not to resonate with at least one person's story within that book. And I think it won't just be men that'll read it. I think it will be women that'll read it as well, because they'll take something away from it. And everyone will be in a position of being able to level up in terms of their understanding, be able to have more empathy, which ties in well with what COVID's done, helped other people understand that if you're a stay-at-home parent, it's really not just sitting at home watching TV. It's so much more than that. And that's the same with reading a book. You understand people so much better, saying, oh my gosh, let's say Frank, I didn't know that's what he was dealing with. And Elliot's so honored and he keeps going about it, and I do understand it. He is trusted with all these people's stories, and some of them have moved him to tears. And he's trusted with their stories that they haven't even told their friends or family about. And they've trusted him with these stories to put out in the world to share their stories. And that is an honor for him. And then pass it on to me, being a social media manager and being able to talk to these individuals, being able to look after the account and engage with these people that want to talk about fatherhood. And it's like, wow, Elliot, you trust me. And it's all like, that's what their brotherhood is about. So holding people to account and making sure you just encourage them in the right ways. And that is what we are. I'm just super passionate about all things to help people be better. And, you know, MFF is that indeed. But the book, I am so thrilled. I know I'm going to buy, I don't know how many copies I'm going to buy, but I'm going to buy a few of them. And it's only because I don't think it's a book that I will read just for myself. It's a book that I'll have. And if someone else I feel needs the book, I'll send it their way. Don't want no money for it. Just be blessed. Take it. And, you know, and if you need to pass on someone else, go for it. And I think that is what we need, a book that's not just a story book, but as a reference book to understand we can do this.
Yeah.
Going for a long spill.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I think it cycles really nicely back to what we were talking to about at the beginning, like to walk in another man's shoes and understand what they're going through and what their, you know, their personal battles are in terms of getting through this stuff. And it's interesting when you talk about, you know, I can relate to one of the stories in the fact that my eldest daughter is autistic, so I get that bit of it. And funnily enough, I was talking to a couple of guests back, a guy called Martin Kellen, his daughter has special needs. And we delved into this whole aspect of, I think as men, we've talked about in this conversation tonight about this, the tendency of guys to want to be able to fix stuff. And I think that this is a really strong point to make in terms of a lot of the stories that guys go through, that natural tendency to want to fix stuff, to make things right, and to take away pain and to protect the family, and to, you know,
yeah.
I think that is what makes these kind of stories and these first-hand accounts both poignant, but also very painful for guys, because we want to take away pain and we want to protect people and we want to protect our families. And I think that when stuff happens, and I'm talking about this personally from my point of view as well, when stuff that happens which is out of your control and you can't do anything about it, that is one of the hardest things, I think, for a man to deal with, because we want to be able to take the pain away. And one of the hardest things I had to do was when my dad died, and I had to break the news to my eldest, because he was like a little best friend sort of thing in some respects. Yeah. And to break that news to, you know, your child and kind of break their heart almost is just totally at odds with everything a dad wants to do, because you don't want to do that. You want to protect them, and you want to fix stuff when it's not right. But it's such a difficult thing to be able to get your head around the fact that there's some stuff in life you just can't fix as a dad. You can try and make it better, and you can help them recover from it, and you can give them all the love that they need and stuff. But there's some stuff that's unfixable as a dad. You know what I mean?
Definitely. And I think that is part of life, isn't it? And I think the very basic way of doing it, or at least how I interpret it, is help them deal with that. And you're thinking, I'd rather you deal it with me. So it is so hard. It is so hard. But is your head saying, logistically, it makes sense that this happens and blah, blah. But your heart's saying, but my poor baby, I don't want to open that door just yet because I want to protect him from the cold and the cruel. But it's one of those things that it is part of life. And I think we need to just, you know, just be aware that we're going to be faced with very difficult situations, one that we don't want to face, but we're going to have to. And, you know, unfortunately, I've had the displeasure of having to lose 5 family members in the space of 16 months, all in separate occurrences. So my mum's had her fill of boots telling me about losses, and I've had to process that in my own way. It's made the person I am today. I wish it didn't happen, but at the same time, if it didn't happen, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be who I am. And I think we just need to learn that we can't stop waves, but we can learn to surf.
I like that. I like that a lot. And that's something that I talk about quite a bit as well. Surfing the waves of emotion is one thing. Yeah, it's there will always be ups and downs, and it's a case of holding on tight when you're going on the troughs, and then holding on equally tight as you go across the crest of the wave and stuff and that. So,
mate, there's so many of them. You've got if life was just the same across the board, it'd be flatline. You would be living. So you need the ups and the downs to prove that you're alive. So there's different there's different ways that you can say these things. But I think it's just whatever you can hold on to keep yourself motivated and keep going, that's what you need to do. Personally, I like to laugh. I like to crack jokes and be that type of person because my way of dealing with things is that life can be hard. Life is full of potholes and across the journey. But laughter is like suspension. It just makes the journey a little bit smoother. Doesn't get rid of potholes, just helps you to embrace it in a more comfortable manner. So you've got to find your happy place, find your reason, your purpose for doing what you're doing, and it will hopefully keep you in a good mental space and keep your wellness intact.
I love it. I love it. When is the book coming out, Matt?
Spring next year. So in time for Father's Day, hint, hint, hint.
Yeah. So to all those listeners that are dads, they're going to have to kind of drop a few notes or say, yeah, I've got this book coming out and I wouldn't mind, maybe you could get it for me or whatever and stuff. So what I'll do is I'll make sure that I'll share it out and stuff when it's close to release and stuff, because it's a wicked project and it has the potential to have so much impact in terms of, you know, putting these stories out there and just really getting this kind of conversation started and guys resonating with, you know, you think you're all alone until you realize there's someone out there going through exactly the same thing as you do. And then that realization that you're not kind of quite going through it alone is a big game changer.
You find that you're part of a tribe.
This is it. And then it all comes back to, you know, we're coming back to tribes, we're coming back to walking in another man's shoes. It's all good. What's the best way for guys to find out about M? I'm gonna get this. I keep saying MMF, but it's not. It's MFF. MFF. What's the best way for guys to find out about what you do?
I guess the easiest way is go to our website, musicfootballfatherhood.com. You can find us on Twitter, which is MFF_online_, and the same is applicable for Instagram, which is the one I personally manage. So you'll probably see my mug on there doing Instagram lives. I do all the content on there, so all the design stuff, all the dog work basically. But I must admit, I enjoy it because the community is amazing, and you know the people that run MFF, they're also amazing. So yeah, get in contact with us there. We'll be around as and when you need us.
All right. I love it. And I'm going to ask you one last question, because you mentioned about questions that you ask people. Then this is one I've not primed you for, but I ask everyone on that comes on Guild of Dads. What is it, Matt, that gives you... What is it, Matt, that gives your life meaning?
Serving others. I know that I'm only here for a finite period of time. I am not the best at anything. I'm not the worst at everything. If I can help inspire, hope, encourage another individual to know that they are worthwhile and they have value, I've done my job. I don't need to be in the spotlight. I'm just happy to keep the light on.
I love it. There's some pearls of wisdom in here that could go into some music lyrics that you've dropped tonight. And I can see that there is a link between, I can see where the music football link comes in, because there's some lyrical genius going on right here on the other side of this microphone.
Only try.
Thanks very much for coming on. It's been a wicked conversation, Matt, and we've covered, you know, the full gambit of kind of fatherhood, and I wish you all the best of luck in the new book. It's going to be fantastic. And thanks ever so much for coming on and speaking to me this evening.
Oh, thank you very much for the opportunity. And what you're doing is a form of therapy. So you don't know how many people you are positively influencing. So thank you to you and what you do. I hope that your brotherhood goes well when you launch it, which when this is released, it'll already be relaunched. But I just hope that you keep growing and going from strength to strength, and that hopefully we can continue working together going forward.
Definitely. Definitely. Take care, Matt.
You too. Thanks for that. Have a great night.
Cheers, man.
Thanks, bye.
Thank you to Matt Brown for talking to me today and sharing his experience and insight with me. You can catch Music Football Fatherhood over at Instagram and Facebook. Their handle is @MFFonline_. The website is musicfootballfatherhood.com, and I'll link all this up in the show notes along with all the other stuff we discussed over at guildofdads.com. Empathy is a powerful skill to develop and was very much the theme of my conversation with Matt on this episode. And MFF are really blowing the lid off a lot of the conversations around fatherhood right now, which is why I was so keen to speak with Matt and find out about the incredible book they have coming up soon. You can check out interviews with a lot of the book's contributors on their Facebook and Instagram channels, and it promises to be a massive success, and for all the right reasons. This discussion was one that we could have done for quite a few hours, and suffice to say, I don't think it will be the last time we link up together and collaborate. There's also a video of this interview over on the Guild of Dads YouTube channel, and you can link up with me over on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook using the handle @GuildofDads. If any of these topics or points that we spoke about today resonate with you, shoot me a message or reach out to me on social media. I love to hear from my listeners. I'm teaching you how to follow a simple system and plan, just like many of my guests, in order to transform all areas of your life so that you can live more purposefully with much greater fulfillment and meaning, at the same time as become the man and dad you always wanted to be. It's all in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint. You can grab it free at guildofdads.com/dad. In order to have a positive impact on the world, we improve ourselves and inspire others. The fee for this show is that you share it with others so that they may benefit from anything you find useful or interesting. If you know someone that could do with improving their relationships, could do with a life rethink or different perspective, share this episode with them. The best bit, you don't have to tell them why you're sharing it with them, but it could be just what they need to hear. Hopefully, you'll find something insightful in every episode, so share with dad you know. In the meantime, live a life of vision, action, and meaning. Apply what you hear, and we'll see you next time.